You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to my couch, as you always are. And now we're on Wednesday, so we have been for a while, 11 in the morning here Pacific time, and wherever you're at around the world, thank you for joining me here on my couch. As always, I have a super special guest. We're going to be getting to him in just a moment. But, you know, we're talking about a subject that I haven't had brought up in a really long time. And I think, wow, it's perfect timing, because it just seems like lately I've had an onset of men reaching out to me as a psychologist and saying, you know, I'm having such a rough time with my relationships and my job and sort of understanding who I am and where I am and, you know, what I'm supposed to be. I know that I'm supposed to be more understanding and caring and listen to my partner and yet be, you know, with all that testosterone going on, a man. What is a man? What does that mean? And they're all asking me, and I'm saying, well, I don't know. I'm not a man. But I'll be happy to help you through psychology and through some of the orientations that I've learned. And I'm here for y'all. But I really appreciate the solid wisdom about men today that my special guest is going to give us, because he's a guy who's been through a lot and learned a lot. And let's bring him on right now. Hey, how are you, Scott Grace? Thanks for being here.
I'm happy to be on the couch with you. I'm happy to be a representation of guys. I wrote a whole book, and I don't think I've ever used the word guy in the vocabulary.
Is that okay? Can we say guy today?
You could say whatever you want.
don't tell me that. We're gonna be in trouble.
Okay. No. All right. I'll keep you in line.
Do that, please.
I'll try.
Let me give you a great intro, because, I mean, this was a fine book, may I say, psychologically, in so many ways for people to learn. And yet, the humor is terrific. Of course, you're a wonderful professional comedian, artist, musician. Let me just tell you a little bit about folks out there about Scott Grace. Of course, you talk about making every mistake in the book when it comes to being a man. And, you know, we're going to find out today what that means. And, you know, how guys can transcend some of the roles that they're dealing with right now. You know, I mean, how can we transcend our egos and our habits and maybe those little relationship boxes that we find themselves, or they find themselves in. And also women, I think you'll be able to better understand men after this interview, because Scott Grace is going to be talking about his latest book, Mindful Masculinity. Huh, what a great title. A book for men and the women, for the women who love them. So I, you know, thank you so much.
It seems cool to be turning out to be a book for women and the men who desperately don't want to lose them. I'm getting far more women reading this book and then demanding that their boyfriends read it.
Right. You're reading that. You sit down every day and dedicate a certain amount of time to read it. Well, it's wonderful. And let me tell folks a little bit more about you, if they don't already know and recognize who you are. You are a highly sought after singer, speaker, workshop leader, life coach, and stand-up comedian. And I understand you rose to prominence opening for big names. I mean, I was blown away. Like Deepak Chopra, Dr. John Gray, Louise Hay, Ram Dass, Dr. Bernie Singel, Byron Katie, Jack Canfield, Marianne Williamson, sweet friend of mine. Thanks to a succession of viral YouTubes, you went on to star as the spiritual Dr. Seuss, which is, you got to see these guys, combining entertainment, wisdom, and comedy. And somewhere in there, you found the time, which most of us can't even do, to pen 4 books. And we can talk a little bit about those others and how folks can find those books. But the one we're talking about today is Mindful Masculinity. What a great title. I mean, how was it that you sort of came up with that title? And it's really kind of cool, your background of what led you to deciding to write this. So can you share that with us, Scott?
Well, first of all, the title, by coming up with 3,000 titles that didn't work, 3,000 number one stumbled in and it just got chills.
Yeah.
The book itself was the first and only time that I didn't come up with an idea that was mine. It was actually the guy behind the scenes who commissioned me to write the book. He had read some of my other books and decided he wanted to publish a book about masculinity, which I told him, not my specialty. Look, my biceps. Well, he said, just write some essays, just start the process, you know, and he gave me a list of topics. And I just found that I had a book inside me that slowly and gradually came out. I didn't really recognize that I had anything to say about the subject of men and masculinity. Most of my clients have been women. I've just not even approached it, but I have done a lot of men's work, seminars and working with big names. I've had a lot of male role models and mentors. So I guess it was time for me to pass on the torch to others.
Oh, that's beautiful. And you are a life coach. I mean, because of your background and all of the people who you work with and studied with and were able to, you know, be exposed to really healthy functioning ways. So tell us a little bit about, you have such a cool background. I mean, you know, besides all of the things that you've done with these amazing leaders and your music background and life coaching and being a stand-up comedian, what are some of the stuff, the things that happened to you in your background that sort of brought you to, whoa, I'm going to be a mindful masculine person,
You know, it's been a combination of developing my masculine side by exercising courage to put myself out there, to speak my truth, to create music while my judgmental mind was going, you don't sound so good, you know, and just keep going. And I say in the book that our masculinity for men and women gets developed by exercising courage, by leaving our comfort zone. Yes. That's how we get stronger as masculinity. But then there's also the feminine side. And I see it as the left and the right side of the brain. I don't see it as men have to be testosterone driven and women estrogen or whatever. It's like the roles have changed. And now where evolution is taking us is we need to be whole brained.
Yes.
So we need to both exercise courage and the receptive, the allowing, the nurturing that allows creativity, that nurtures new life. The feminine side of life needs to be birthed through men and women so that our planet can stay, so we can stay here. You know, human beings need to learn how to value life, which is a feminine quality.
Right.
So you know, don't destroy the earth. Go ahead. I'm rambling.
No, I interrupted you. I'm sorry. But no, it's funny because when I was starting out in my early studies, you know, what we learn is what are healthy behaviors, what are healthy thought patterns and all that. And I'll never forget, one of my professors used to really stress the importance of people who are healthier have more androgyny within them. In other words, they can get in touch with their stronger or whatever the characteristics you want to define as masculine side. And of course, they're more gentle or feminine side. And I don't know, that's sexist. I get it, all that. But I mean, back then, this is what my professor was saying. If we can yin yang it, we're a little healthier people usually because it helps us understand the opposite sex a little bit better, no matter what sexual orientation you are. Right. I mean,
absolutely. Yeah. And it's also a key to enjoying life. Like our culture teaches us to yang, 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 yang till retirement. And then we retire and it's like, I don't know how to relax. I don't know how to do nothing. I don't know. You know, it's like we have to develop that side of the brain, and it's a heart muscle that needs to be developed. How to be instead of just do.
Right.
Just how to do and be and do and be, like Frank Sinatra mastered. Doobie doobie doo.
Do me that, please. You are so cool. And I love your sense of humor, by the way. You are so funny. And it just, it's like right there. So that's both your left and right brain working together, right?
Yes.
Is comedians are more highly intelligent because they process faster and they can think on the spot. So mazel tov to you.
Good for you. Mazel tov.
What do you think are some of the most negative things that men carry within them in their lives?
The biggest one is the message to not feel. Because then when pain happens, it gets pushed out. It gets stored in the warehouse of our unconscious. Wow. And we never get to cry it out, shake it out, scream it out, pound it out. The taboo against vulnerability holds men back from being on a healing journey.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
No, I think you're really right. And, you know, there's always that. And it's because sort of, it could be in the DNA, huh? But it's also being raised, you know, as a be a man, you know. It depends on what our parents were like. But find a majority of, you know, that it there's because the parents can't handle it. They can't handle seeing their child, boy child, man child, crying or whatever. But I think that's what it is. It's like, you know, hold it in, girl cry, right?
Yeah, and you can get that message, you know, in the schoolyard, amongst peers. It doesn't necessarily, you know, it's not the parents. It's a culture. Right. It's a culture that needs changing and is changing rapidly.
Right. So, as a life coach, you really kind of help people, men, if you were, get in touch, sort of, with that inner emotion and help allow them to bring forth, you know, pain or crying or understanding it's release, right? So that's healthy.
It is. It is one of my specialties, and not just for men, but for women too. I like to say that our feelings are like airplanes that have been waiting for the air traffic controller to say, come on down. And they all want to come down once you say yes. So it can get very, very messy, especially for us control freaks that love to control when the planes come down. So
right.
I needed a guide. I spent a lot of time on the couch, Michelle, with therapists and coaches and guides. And, you know, one of the main reasons that I feel happy in my life is because I know I can feel sad.
Yes.
I know I can feel scared and still move forward. I know I can work with the inner critic and hear that voice that's holding me back. And work with it instead of just having it be unconsciously pushed down by workaholism or alcoholism or you name your ism.
Right.
Because there's a lot of isms out there.
We are there ever, right? Exactly. And I want to get to that inner critic in just a little bit because you really talk a lot about that in your book and you help folks as well. But I also want to, who are some of your biggest influencers in your life, besides, you know, you talked about therapists, but some of the people you worked with, perhaps, you know, that we mentioned, like Ram Dass, Louise Hay, or I mean,
Well, actually, I mean, there a lot of the big names that I worked with, they were too busy to mentor me, and we worked on a professional level. The people that influenced me the most, and I wrote about them in the book. We're not, you know, luminaries in the spotlight. There was a tennis player who she was seeded 51st in the world in women's tennis. And she mentored me through tennis.
Oh, how cool.
And yeah, like she would just like with grace and ease, like twice my age, she would beat my pants off of. And I said, you know, how do you move so gracefully? How do you make it look so easy?
Right.
And she said, Scott, you value effort and you value struggle. And so you make it hard. But
yeah.
if you learn to value grace and ease more than you value effort and struggle, then you're going to glide to the ball.
Oh, yes.
It becomes like the universe playing tennis through you.
Mm-hmm.
So she, and then I wrote about my friend Richard Barty, who inspired me more than anyone. I was living in New York City and I would run into him, and he was called the D-Train Poet. Ooh. And I would see him on the trains.
Yeah.
And everybody was on the train to get somewhere, but he was on the train to communicate. And he would get people in the train in the early 1980s chanting, "More hugging, less mugging, more hugging, less mugging, more hugging, less." And then he would go into a rap. He said, like, "I asked everybody, everybody agreed. More hugging, less mugging is what we need. All I want to do is just plant the seed." He was, I mean, he was like so courageous and fun, and he would look teenagers in the eye and just get them to not do drugs.
Wow.
Through love, not through, you know, Nancy Reagan.
Yeah. That's right.
For those of you that don't know, Nancy Reagan was a first lady way back in the day who told everybody, just say no. When it comes to drugs.
Right.
And I don't know about you, but my inner rebel, when I hear just say no,
right.
wants to say, you know what? I'm going to do it.
That's right.
Like,
that's
ooh, right. It's more exciting now.
I don't want to say no. Yeah, exactly. No,
so, the book addresses this whole thing where the inner critic is like, you better not do that. And the inner rebel is like, oh yeah?
Right.
Like, you know, so anytime you have a should, like I should get this done, there might be this rebellious voice that's going to find creative ways for you not to get it done. And you call yourself undisciplined. You call yourself a procrastinator. You call yourself lazy. No, you're none of those things. You're just standing up to the inner tyrant inside you. It's a healthy rebellion.
Right.
And the answer is to treat yourself with more kindness and gentleness. The inner critic is discouraging. It removes you from your courage. And a kind, supportive, encouraging inner life coach voice, it says you can do it.
Yes.
We can make this fun. And if you don't do it, it's okay. Right. You know, you're not a bad person because you haven't checked everything off on your list.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I think that's one of the most common things that I hear from men is, and women, of course. But I mean, from men, it's that they feel they have to be more or something. And I don't know that, you know, whatever that is, wealthier, more successful, more. And I know women, we all do feel like that. But I mean, there is this, I don't know, like unspoken pressure sometimes on men who are in anguish, and they're like, oh God, I just don't feel like I'm enough, or I'm not, you know, strong enough, or I'm not good looking enough, or I'm not, I mean, it's really interesting how all that rolls out sometimes, you know? So what are some of the tools besides really what you just talked about, facing that we can use or men can use as well, to, you know, dealing with that constant voice that's saying, and we kind of know where a lot of that came from, right? That's saying, you're not enough. You're not good enough. You're not doing it. You have to be better in whatever.
Yeah, I know it well. So when men come to me, it can take a lot of courage just to reveal that voice, just to be transparent with yourself, to be honest with yourself about, here are the rules that I'm breaking. You know, here's the way that I think my life is supposed to be like, and I'm not doing it, and I suck.
Yeah.
And exactly, you know, and everybody's got their reasons, their list of reasons that they suck. And
why do I suck?
When I work with individuals, I tune into them. I get to know them. We develop rapport, and I I figure out, do they need a more masculine or more feminine approach to learning to do combat, to have a relationship with that voice where it's no longer the king,
right?
Where it's actually just one of the voices in the choir. It's on the committee. You know, it can stand up and have an opinion, but it doesn't have dominion. Now, just I'll give you an example of what I mean by masculine or feminine tools to deal with that belief, I'm not enough. And first of all, of course, many a woman has that belief.
Yeah.
And generally speaking, men are raised with the idea that they need to prove
right.
their masculinity. They need to prove their lovability. They need to prove their worth.
Right.
And once you get on that train, there is never enough. You never go, okay, I proved my worth.
Right. Okay. You're right.
It's a constant scarcity mentality. It's like I have a lack of self-worth, but I need more money, more love, more sex, more relation, you know, and at a certain point, maybe I'll have enough, but it's not. It's a hamster wheel, an endless cycle. So a masculine tool to deal with that would be, in a sense, to tell that voice to shut up. Stop it. You're hurting the baby. There's like an inner child in all of us, no matter how old we are, that is very vulnerable and gets its feelings hurt. And like, it's almost like we need an adult to stand up in between the inner critic, which is like a bully, saying you're no good, and a very tender inner child, and protect that child and stand up and say, hey,
you may have some
valid points, but your tone, it's just not working. You got to shut up.
Right.
We got to learn how to speak kindly to ourselves. This is not working. It's never worked.
Right.
So that's kind of a masculine, more logical approach.
Yeah.
And then a more feminine would be to empathize with the inner critic.
Oh, yeah.
To, in a sense, voice dialogue. You know this stuff. Voice dialogue. You know, hey, are you feeling worried that if we continue down this path, our dreams are not going to come true? Are you wanting to protect me and support me by pointing out my faults so we might get motivated? Are you wanting to motivate me? Thank you. You know, and just right. when the critical voice gets heard, it relaxes. It's like, oh, you're hearing me. Sometimes that's enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I like a combination. The empathy to the critical voice and then the rewiring, the new voice. You got to, like, you know, reparent yourself. So that both of those are equally valid. Go ahead. You have a doctor in front of your name.
No, you're beautifully. No, that's perfect. Reparenting is so huge. And there's so many ways we can do that. And you talk about that in your book. So it's really helpful to a lot of people. And I think, like you say in the book, it's for, you know, men to really get more mindful of who they are and discover their strengths and be gracious on themselves, et cetera. And you have wonderful tips and we'll talk more about that. And also for women to understand too. I mean, we all have these feelings and these fears, and it helps, your book helps women understand men quite a bit more. And because, you know, I mean, and I thank you for that, because I don't know if we have a lot of books like that. And the last book I read and guest I had on about men was written by a woman. So it's and I wasn't, not, she's amazing and I'm not, but it was so, yeah, but you don't have all that testosterone running through you and, you know, that kind of thing. So you know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, you want to talk a little bit about testosterone or you know,
let's do it.
What the hell is testosterone? Well, good. It's, all right, so testosterone, if left unchecked, if it's not guided through wisdom,
right,
it becomes, how can I get my ego to have dominance over others, over a woman, over life? And all of that energy, that life force that is testosterone, can be channeled in destructive ways. But it's also possible to channel testosterone in ways that create and ways that protect. To protect and serve is the natural inclination of male energy.
Well said. Yes. Yes.
You know, not just the New York City police pit.
Right. Survival, you know, it really is. Total survival is what it is.
You know what? You say that.
Yeah.
But it's also protect and serve creativity, protect and serve vulnerability, protect and serve love.
Yes. Yes.
Protect and serve the earth. Yes. Survival is part of it, but it's also thriving. It's like, so testosterone.
Yep.
Once upon a time, you know, men had an overdose of it and they felt like killing each other. And so they went off to wars.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's completely over on the planet, but it has been getting less and less every year. There's less of that.
Okay, good.
Yeah. I mean, that's the New York Times.
Oh, okay. I'm going, whatever.
However, there was a time in Sumeria, ancient Sumeria, between the Tigris and Euphrates River, where Iran currently calls home, where there were warriors that got curious, and they took their spears, and somehow they said, let's see who can throw our spears the furthest.
Okay.
Rather than at each other, let's compete.
Oh.
And God said, let there be competition. And all of this aggression started to get channeled through healthier ways on playing fields.
Yeah.
And men and some women who have a lot of testosterone running either get on those playing fields and play it out, or they're in the spectator seats and they're enjoying getting their testosterone pumped up and moved through by having a team that they're rooting for.
Right.
So the energy of testosterone, when it's at its most primitive, is war, violence. Mm-hmm. Then when it up-levels to competition, that can be fierce. You can hate the other team. It gets more mature when you hate the other team, but lose gracefully and maybe even take them out for a beer.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And then it gets more mature when you just have, you know, you're going to have fun. You go to the game and you know whether your team wins or loses. The game itself is so much fun. It doesn't matter so much if there's winning or losing.
Right. Exactly.
And then there's another level.
It's that energy too.
There's another level of what I would call testosterone enlightenment, where the only competition in your bones is competing with yourself. I want to be more. I want to fly to the moon is a very masculine thing. I want to go where no man has gone before. The original Star Trek had that, you know, line. Pioneering. I want to pioneer by opening myself to new experiences, by taking a new language, by expressing myself more honestly and vulnerably to my wife than I ever have before. That's masculine courage.
Yes. Yes.
To open your heart where it's scary, where you've never revealed yourself before, that's it. Well, it's a fun dichotomy. It's a paradox, because opening your heart is a feminine thing, but because of masculine fears, cultural fears that men are not supposed to be, and then fill in the blank, wimpy, mushy, feely. If you are confronting those taboos and opening your heart anyway, that's courage.
Sure.
And courage is going to strengthen your masculine side.
That makes a lot of sense, right? Because I think, like you said, I think, and you explained in your book, the courage is what we need to allow ourselves and be cool with having those touchy-feely sides and the emotion and all that. So, I mean, that makes a lot of sense, you know?
Yeah.
And by the way, guys, in case you just tuned in, everybody, we're talking to Scott Grace. You've probably seen him, heard of him. He is an amazing life coach. He's also an excellent, well-known comedian, musician, performer, has worked with so many influencers who are mindful and have helped us out in our lives. Deepak Chopra, Marianne Williamson, you name it. Louise Hay, he's worked with them. Aram Dass, Jack Canfield, oh my God, all my favorite people, Byron Katie, and really embraced, you know, his own life and what he's been through, and looking at how men can be more mindful. Mindful means what to you, Scott? What does mindful mean to you?
Mindful is a buzzword. It means that my book might get more hits because it's trending. Now that's semi serious, but
I know.
honesty, mindfulness is the ability and the willingness to be aware,
right?
To be self-reflective without self-analytical. It's
yes.
enacting the observer, the witness, and the witness without guilt, shame, witnessing, hey, what's running me? What's making me tick right now? What is the emotion driving me right now? Am I being driven by fear, greed, love, longing? What's driving the car? What's driving the vehicle? Is my foot on the brake and the accelerator?
Yeah.
I want to know what's under the hood. It's like, I want to know myself.
Right.
When I was in high school, the first book that I read about all this stuff was Alan Watts.
Right.
The taboo against knowing who you are.
That's right. That's right.
I think men have that a little bit more than others. Like sure. We know more about what's under the hood of our cars than what's under the hood of our psyches. And
sure.
Mindfulness is the willingness and the interest, the curiosity to get to know yourself.
Yes. Yes. It's beautifully said. I love that. Yeah. Being mindful of you and also your body and, you know, how you react and muscle tension and how, you know, we get amped up and those chemicals and everything else that's happening as well in mindfulness. And, oh no,
yes.
I'm seeing I'm feeling that the anxiety and I'm getting really angry and how that wells up in all of us actually. But, you know, I think more so in men because of, you know, the testosterone, as we talked about, but also the survival mechanism and sort of positioning in the human consciousness and what men do to protect the species as well.
Yes.
The species.
Yes.
So,
yes.
By the way, in case y'all tuned in here, I'm with the famous Scott Grace. He's the author of 4 books, and we're talking about his latest today, Mindful Masculinity, a book for men, and the women who love them, talking about how to be more mindful about yourself and sort of figure out who you are in today's society. And I know it's been kind of mishigosh information because you're supposed to be touchy-feely and warm and loving and express your emotions, and yet you got to be the man. You got to stand up and take care of whatever, you know. So it would be very frustrating. You know, something that brings up for me is the concept, and we hear this a lot, Scott, of toxic masculinity. That kind of, I just kind of grossed out at that before in my mind, but you decided not to use that phrase, right? Because what does that mean to you, toxic masculinity?
It means that it's trending, that it's buzz. It's a phrase that is used for different reasons, and so it's not black and white.
Right.
I do see it as when masculinity is not in service of. Well, let's just stop there. When masculinity is not coming from service and all this life energy and strength and power is going towards conquering, possessing,
right.
controlling, manipulating, owning, being bigger, better, separate, building bigger towers, tearing people down so I can feel better about myself.
Right, right.
Toxic masculinity. I've never said it before. I like what I'm saying. It's masculinity that's not in service to anyone but the ego.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yes. And that's That's right. And it's also, you know, sort of in keeping with the definition you hear all these, so many people, you know, with the YouTube, you know, podcasts, et cetera. And they're all about, you know, he's a narcissist. Men have narcissistic tendencies. You know, it's like, wait a minute, where's the line between, you know, being a little toxic? And we all have a little bit of, and have to have, if you want to say narcissism within us, right? We all have a little, we have to boost our own egos and say, you can do this. And mm-hmm. So I guess.
And when you do that with love, then you don't have to be a narcissist. You don't have to be gazing at your reflection, because right. you know that you're enough, and you know that you know you're going to have the most fun by going out in the world and helping others. So why gaze at your own reflection if you already have validated that your reflection is in connection with divine perfection?
Yes, exactly.
And that God made a selection by putting you on this earth. So let's go out there with merriment and mirth. And let something new be birthed.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. I love that. And I love your poetry, by the way, and your music. And if we can, in a little while, touch a little bit on that. So, you know, folks can hear your wisdom and your creativity as well. So.
Well, what a coincidence, because I do have my guitar handy, but I'll wait until you feel like cool. It's the right moment.
Yes, it will be. I'm going to be talking to a psychologist. Oh, I think this is going to be just like, oh, God, you know. But no, we have a lot of variety on this show and fun. So we're going to do that as well, if we can do that. But also, you talk about, you know, we talked about self-esteem being not enough and self-talk and how to do that. And left, right, and sort of how we balance that as well, and looking within. And I really think that is so cool. You have that chapter, which I think is very interesting. And again, referring back to narcissism, you have that chapter called The Righteous Man. And I thought that was pretty cool, because it was like, a lot of men have this need to be right. Right? I mean, I'm sorry. How could
a T. Harv Eker, am I right or am I right?
Right. How can a man deal with that part of his psyche? How do you think that men can, you know,
well, it's
get
a great
hold
question.
Of it? Come on now.
It's a great question. And it's a journey. And it starts with honesty. My need to be right now has taken me over. I have no room to listen to the other person. And so I am being possessed by this devil, this part of me that feels like the only way I can be safe and valid as a person is if I get my point across.
Right.
And right. So the first thing to do is just be honest. Okay, time out. I am in my righteous asshole side. And I need to take a time out so I can see what's underneath that, because that is just a defense. It's a posturing.
Yes.
It's a form of fight, just sure. Like fight or flight. There's a part of me that feels that survival is being threatened, and that the only way I can protect myself is to get my point across.
No, exactly.
Now, if you go under the hood and you start to practice mindfulness, you can feel something inside you that's shaking. So it could look like righteousness in your communication, like arrogance. But what is that arrogance but a protective shield for a part of me that's shaking, that is quivering in insecurity, in fear that I'm wrong, in fear that I'm going to be shamed, rejected, criticized, or abandoned if I don't prove my point is right?
Correct.
So. Yeah. Basically, underneath righteous anger or just the need to be right is the most difficult emotion for a man to even acknowledge he has.
Wow.
Shame. Wow. Shame. How many people walk around going, oh, I'm in touch with some shame right now? It's just, it hides yes. under the covers.
Yes. No, that's beautifully said. It really does. It's like, and no, guys don't talk about that. You know, they're not. But being aware. Okay,
let's have a beer and talk about our shame.
That's it. Go to the sports bar and watch people compete like you talked about. And just cheer everybody on. No, that's right. Something else that I see a lot when I do couples therapy is women are saying, just listen to me. Just listen to my feelings. It's like, stop trying to fix me. You got to fix the problem. We kind of know, but where does this all come from? I mean,
would you like my support, Dr. Michelle, in helping men fix the addiction to fixing women's feelings?
Yes.
Okay, good. I think John Gray did amazing work with this in his book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. However, it's a new millennium and men and women are from Earth and we've got to learn to deal with it. Sorry, John.
It's okay.
So to the extent that a man sees and experiences his own emotions as problems to be fixed, so he doesn't actually feel them, he just touches them and goes, what's wrong with me? Why am I, blah, blah, blah. Is the extent that he won't have the listening capacity to, pardon the New Age lingo, but to hold space. For a woman to hold space and to recognize, to become mindful that what is in the way of holding space. There's a few things. One of them is the it's my fault syndrome.
Right.
So it's almost like if a man takes you out to a new restaurant and you don't like it, like he feels like it's he was the chef and you're rejecting his food, right? That's how men can take things so personally.
Sure.
So when you say, when a woman says, when a woman has some feelings that she wants to be heard, it would be very helpful if she could say, could you do me the biggest favor? Could you just listen? And by the way, this is not about you. And it would be such a gift to me if you simply just listen, maybe make a few grunts, a little primitive noises, like, In other words, tell a man how he could win before the game begins. Don't just say, listen to me, because that kind of feels like a command and men are clueless how to do that. But be in that feminine side that says, if you could just be quiet for a few minutes, just listen, just be with me, maybe even hold me. It would be such a gift. Do you think you can do that? Is this a good time for you? How respectful is that? To even say, is this a good time? So important, so respectful.
Yes.
And you're telling him, you're saying, the secret to my heart right now is to shut up. No fixing.
No.
But you say that, you ask him for that from a feminine place.
That's right.
And
no.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, and then... and then the rest is up to a man. There are things a man can do to increase his listening capacity. One of them is to recognize when he's overloaded and to be able to say, can we slow down?
Yay.
I'd really like to stay with you and I'm getting overloaded. How about if we just take a few minutes to take a few breaths and let me repeat back to you the essence of what I've been hearing so I could get that I'm understanding you or you can correct me. So, and then when a man reflects what he's hearing from a woman, it gives him time to slow down and it gives the woman what she most is wanting, which is to be seen and heard. And if he's off, she could say, well, that's not quite it, but thank you so much. Here's what I really meant to say, or, I'm sorry, I wasn't so clear. Here's
right.
All right. So there's the, can we slow down?
I love that.
There's also the honesty of saying, I can't hear you right now. Some pain is getting triggered for me. I need to go explore it, but I'd love to come back and continue this conversation when I can really listen to you.
Oh, that's beautiful. Oh, I love it.
These are great tools, but the biggest and most important one is to get men on the couch
Yes.
With Dr. Michelle or Scott Grace, somebody who can be a champion to guide you so that you can learn to not fix your own fear, anxiety, sadness, joy, righteous anger. You know, these are not problems to be fixed.
Yes, it's true.
When you can hold space for every feeling inside you, you become a great listener to others.
Oh, that's so beautiful. I love it. You're the best. You know, we're running out of time.
No, I refuse to believe that.
It's gone so fast. So, by the way, folks, here's how the best way you can pick up the book. Of course, it's on Amazon. Mindful Masculinity, a book for men and the women who love them. Scott Grace, you are such an inspiration. What's another great way that folks can get your book and find out more about you?
That's the only place currently. However, my website, scottsongs.com, is a great place to visit. Everything there you want to know about me and my music, poetry, books.
Right. Beautiful.
And coaching.
And coaching as well, which you do so well. Your book contains some great segments of poems that you've written by what you call your altered ego. The Spiritual Dr. Seuss. Got to check those out also.
Oh, God.
It's just amazing stuff. Also, the Audible version. You guys should pick that up because it has brief clips of your original songs woven through each chapter, which really, you know, we learn through enjoyment and music too. So songs are really pairing up perfectly with all of your chapters that have to do with understanding yourself better, guys, and just being better people, being happier men through mindful masculinity. Scott, thank you so much for being here on the couch with me today. You're great. You're great. I love your personality. You're fun. You're funny. Can you come back again sometime?
Anytime. And we'll talk about anything.
Great. Not tomorrow. No. We'll talk.
We'll talk on the couch. We'll talk about the joy and the ouch. Being on Zoom, not the phone, so we could really connect, Scott and Michelle Cohn.
So we can come on home and be together.
Love you. And I just want to applaud you because you have such a bright, shiny personality. You could be center stage, but you've also learned to balance that by bringing out the best and letting other people shine.
Aww,
so that's so beautiful how you can be the diva. And you can really help other people and empower them to be the diva. And that's the best, I think.
Aw, thank you so much. And I, you know, that's because that's within you and that's what you see. So there
absolutely.
You go. So, well, bless you and have a lovely time today and the rest of your evening. And we'll talk soon, hopefully.
I love it. Bye-bye.
All right, everybody. Thanks here for being on the couch. As I always say, take care of yourselves first, and then you'll be great for others. Have a good one. Bye.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.